This meeting is being recorded.
Have you ever wondered what death doulas talk about when they get together? This podcast is offered to you by the Death Doula Ontario Network as doulas gather to talk about all things related to death, dying, and grief. Founder and director Olga Nikolaev and members of the Death Doula Ontario Network gather and share their powerful personal and professional experiences with end-of-life care. Death Doula Chats are our stories about our experiences with offering and providing end-of-life care support in our communities. We hope and pray that our words have a healing impact on your own experience and assist you in learning about death doulas and end-of-life care support. The Death Doulas Network mission is to gather death doulas across Ontario and serve as the educational and business collaborative community of practice. The network's vision is to increase public knowledge and death literacy, enhance end-of-life care skills, and provide up-to-date end-of-life resources and information. In addition, the Death Doula Ontario Network is part of a global movement, a world mission to better educate, advocate, and empower everyone in their end-of-life journey. So welcome Carrie Batt, who is here to speak to us about her role as and journey being a death doula and the type of services that Carrie offers. So my first question to you, Carrie, is what motivated you to become a death doula?
There's a fella named Rami Shami who was offering a workshop unrelated to death care, Kintsugi Bowl. And in his introduction, he spoke of his work in a hospice in Toronto, and he's talked about how he's been in the death care community working for over 30 years, and I was in awe. And I talked to him after, and I asked him, so after 30 years, how many people, and what's it like to offer end-of-life support to somebody with a disability? And he had said he had never. And I actually thought he didn't know what I meant, so I rephrased the question. And he again said the same thing. No, I'd never. I said, not anybody with a quadriplegic, somebody who's deaf, somebody who's blind, anything like that. He said, no. And I said, okay, I think that's what I'm meant to do. And so I said, guide me and tell me what I need to do. And so I just went along, took every course that he recommended, and completed the death care training.
Fantastic. And I actually know Rami Shami. He is and continues to be a leader in the hospice palliative care movement across Ontario. A lot of his work is very much grounded in trauma-informed care and enabling all of us to have more awareness around cultural diversity and humility. So absolutely, very much appreciate Rami's work. So what part of this work are you most passionate about, Carrie? It sounds to me like providing support within the disability community is something that you're really passionate about. And I wonder if you can speak to that a little bit more.
Yeah, so once I finished my training, the only reason why I took the training is exactly that. I offer education, presentations, and end-of-life care and support to the disability community. More specifically, because that's what I'm familiar with the most, is developmental disability. But I also have worked with, I currently work within the developmental disability community, like as a, in another capacity. But so the full range of disability, multiple disabilities, dual diagnosed, that kind of thing. So, so my business, so after I finished my training, I started up my business, Soul Care. And yes, it's exclusive to people who have a disability to bring that topic to that community and to join the gap between the death care bereavement community and our disability community, and to join that gap where there's a real lack of education. There's no conversations, there's no education, and there's no expertise in that area.
That's fantastic. I certainly, as a palliative care nurse and having had some experience in providing support at the bedside, I am and was aware of some of the gaps that exist as they continue to exist, especially within communities that maybe sometimes are seen on the periphery or kind of those that are oftentimes doubly vulnerable. So that's
very true.
That's wonderful. And if I was to say, why do you think it's important? What is it? What's the important piece about offering, specifically end of life care support to the disability community?
So while I was in my training, there was obviously a whole bunch of words that I've never heard before in my life. The whole training was like, I've traveled a lot and I've lived in lots of different places. So I really, it was like a culture shock. And so one word that really stood out for me was health equity. And those words have been my guiding force that when you realize what the word means, you say, yeah, everybody is entitled to the same kind of health care, the same kind of end of life support and care as everybody else. So that's my guiding force.
That's interesting, Carrie, because it's part of also the language that, again, we're addressing in some of the changes, even related to medically assisted in dying and broadening the scope of our awareness around health equity, as well as the social determinants of health. So how we as a society actually are able to offer support and empower people who may have some vulnerabilities in sort in their social arenas of their life. Absolutely. Now, I can probably, speaking from my own experience, I know that work in end of life is not always easy. And that sometimes it can be quite, it can impact us quite negatively sometimes, especially when there's a lot of stress. And so I want to get some insight from you in relationship to self-care. How do you care for yourself when maybe you are tasked, I think, with maybe a kind of a double compounded difficulty sometimes providing this end-of-life care support within the disability community? What do you do for yourself to care for yourself?
So, I've always worked with people. And so a long time ago, you realize if I'm going to survive any of this, being with people all the time in a variety of different situations, being stressed to the max sometimes. So exercise is my best friend. And breath work, as well as yoga. Those are like my three key components to my life. And really, I really love to eat really well. I like to supply myself with the good stuff.
With the good stuff.
Just water and fruits, vegetables, vegetarian since I was 16, that kind of stuff. So self-care and remembering myself has always been an essential component to my whole life. So moving into the end of life stuff, it wasn't such a big jump, like, oh, what am I going to do with all of this? It's like, no, Carrie, just keep with what you know and move forward and pick up a couple of new things along the way. But those are my key go-tos.
Sounds like you therefore had very much a mindfulness practice, both in how you care for your physical and the food that you take in.
Yeah. My mind, body, and soul I think of that every day. What am I nourishing? What am I, what am I taking in? What am I taking in? Am I sitting around people who are just sitting around gossiping about something? Not my thing. Am I sitting around talking to people about really good stuff? Yeah, sure. But yeah, what I consume in all forms has been a key factor for me since I was 16 years old.
Fantastic. Those are the foundational kind of bases on how do we care for ourselves. That's excellent. Now, Carrie, I'm asking all of the doulas this particular question. What do you think the future holds for end of life death doulas? What do you think the future will be 5 to 10 years from now?
You read so many wonderful and uplifting and inspiring articles, and you hear about people doing so many amazing things, and we're tapping into long-term care. We're tapping into the medical healthcare system. So it's just a matter of time, really. That's all it is. It's a matter of time. And I totally can see we will be united with the healthcare and long-term care, and that won't be a problem. It'll be a struggle to get in there and to have a side by side, but for sure it'll happen.
So that's what you mean, that it will happen in relationship to integrating doulas into hospice palliative care? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I believe they will be. I really sincerely do believe that. Just by what you read and what you, you know, just the education that's out there, what doctors are learning and what they're asking for, right? It's not so much, I don't think that we have to ram ourselves down their throat. I think it's they are coming to their own conclusions. It's what they're asking, it's what they're seeking out, you know?
So and that's why. So by they, you mean folks who are at the end of life or those caring for them? Is that what you mean?
Well, the medical professionals too, right? Okay. Palliative care doctors, palliative care nurses, they're seeing that they need us side by side. It's not
they
like
need more
that
help.
They're not resisting what we offer at all. From what my take on, from what I'm aware of, is they're not shutting the door on us. They're quite open and welcoming.
So would you say that would be one of the things that other doulas could do, is have some of these conversations with their healthcare provider, with their own doctor, with connecting to some of those providers within their communities as a way of letting them know that they're here and available if they need that kind of support?
And also tapping into starting the conversation with them, right? And saying, hey, where are you at? What do you think about this idea? How would you ever feel about that? That kind of a stuff. And just let them do the talking and just guide the conversation. And then, more often than not, they'll be saying, yes, we welcome that.
That's fantastic. Anything that you want our particular listeners to know about specifically end-of-life doulas or death doulas, and especially any information that might be helpful for them to know related to the disability community?
Yeah, it's what I say when I'm doing some education is, if you've never, so I have a brother who has a developmental disability. So disability has been my whole life. So when I meet people who say, oh, I've never been around somebody who has a, to them that's foreign. So how do I bridge that gap? So, you know, I really start off with being honest with yourself that it's okay to be uncomfortable and to acknowledge that you're uncomfortable. Let's just give an example. Somebody who has autism and they're jumping up like a pogo stick and they're flapping their ears. First example. So if you've never in your life been around somebody who is doing that, you may be super uncomfortable and you may be scared. You may be a whole bunch of things. And it's really great to acknowledge that and to be aware that you could be uncomfortable and educated as well, and to learn about what's going on there.
I think that sometimes I could see that particular example be relatable also to end of life care, right? So maybe we bear witness to a particular end of life experience. And if we've never seen it, it can kind of scare us a little bit. And so opening up the conversation, right? Being willing to say, I don't know what this is. Help me to better understand.
Exactly. Or, you know, something simple. Somebody doesn't use language to communicate. They're on their deathbed, but they're able to use, they have always used, their eyes go up for yes, maybe to the left for no, down for help, whatever. So be inquisitive. The other thing I say is get curious, be inquisitive. So, you know, you're going to find out from their caregivers or their family members, how do they communicate? There's certain basic things that you want to find out, right? Pain tolerance, pain management, communication style, cognitive, those kind of things are your basic things when you enter somebody's room as a patient who's nearing end of life or who you're supporting from the beginning to the end.
Absolutely. I have had the opportunity and the honor, I would say, to be part of a disability community and offer some recreation and some support. And so I can completely kind of understand and appreciate there were ways in which I had to develop my communication. I had to adjust, right? Because it wasn't the ability always for the other person to adjust. And so, and what I also recognized through that experience is that I could and I did adjust my communication and was able to actually really connect with the person in that way, and found that really rewarding that I had the ability to do that. Absolutely. So Carrie, you know, it's,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yep. I was just going to say that, you know, if you are a doula and you meet up with somebody who has a disability, for me, it's really about tuning into that person. So tuning it, it's like you're tuning into an instrument. You're fine tuning. So you're getting connected to that person. So no matter what their disability is, the tuning in is a part of honoring who they actually are.
Tuning in. That sounds great. So Carrie, how can folks reach you if they wanted to connect with you specifically? What's the best way for them to reach you?
I have a website. My business is called Soul Care. So my website is www.soulcare, S-E-O-L care, C-A-R-E.ca. That would be the best thing.
Great. And what community do you provide support for? Where are
Halton,
you?
Halton. I'm in Halton if it's in person, but I also do, you know, online virtual.
Online as well, which is one of the things I think all of us got onto online, right, in the midst of the pandemic, and something that we're continuing with, which is very beneficial. Absolutely.
100%, yes.
So thank you so much, Carrie, for taking the time to be with us today. So I want to say thank you for spending the time with the Deaf Doula Ontario Network and all of our members. And we hope that all of you who are listening will continue to come back and here are some of our collective stories on this Deaf Doula Chats podcast.